I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hey, you know it's Taz and
Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. Yes, coming to you live, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You've got Mike and Sam across the way. Bogish, double duty in for Taz this morning. He's got your updates as we take you right up until 9. We're going to chat with Vin Parisi, college basketball analyst for Fox Sports 1. We'll delve into... And he's going to join us in about 20 minutes from now, Bogish and myself, and we'll delve into the big topic that has got us going early on this morning, the end of that UVA-Auburn game, as your national championship game is set for tonight. And if you're a Virginia fan, you don't care. You're happy guy made the free throws late in the game. You're happy you're playing for a national championship. Now you get Chris Beard and the Texas Tech Red Raiders. And we'll get back to your calls here in just a second, but a quick thought on them. I mean, unbelievable job. I mean, if you're Chris Beard, number one, the starters they lost Bogish off the team a year ago. We know how good of a pro that you have, or a guy that's going to be a top six or top seven draft choice come June and the NBA draft in Culver. And you win a game against Michigan State where he struggles in the first half, does nothing offensively. Mooney goes off draining threes left and right. You start the second half in a game... You're led by, what, two at the half. You start the second half against Michigan State, 8 of 14 from the field in half number two. Draining three after three after three as Mooney was putting his best Steph Curry performance on. But to do what he's been able to accomplish at Texas Tech is remarkable. I mean, first Final Four appearance in program history. Obviously, first championship game appearance in program history. They are an unbelievable defensive team. They really are. It is like they know exactly where everyone is going to be at every given moment and are so locked into the game plan. He is an unbelievable coach, and they have been I know people don't love defense, but if you watch them play and as well as they play together, they are an unbelievable watch too.
I think getting anyone of any age, I wanted to say kids, but I mean, just getting basketball players to play defense may be the hardest thing to do in coaching because nobody wants to play defense. And people like blocking shots, they like steals and dunks, but the commitment for a full shot clock to playing defense over and over and over again for 40 minutes or 32 in high school, whatever it may be, 48 in the NBA, it's asking a lot of guys to do it. And he's been able to do it everywhere he's gone. Yeah. It really, it begs the question, how many ADs, obviously a lot of them, missed on Chris Beard as he was bouncing around lower levels, Little Rock 1 year, won a tournament game, and now he's doing this here, and it's historically impressive what he's doing. Now, because he's 46, so he doesn't jump out at you as this young, baby-faced kind of Brad Stevens guy, but he's got a chance to win a national championship in basically his fourth year
at Texas
as a Division I head coach, which is just that it doesn't happen. And he's doing it without, if he stumbled on the actual Steph Curry or had Kevin Durant develop out of nowhere and had this one singular player. Now, and Culver can play as a pro, but he's not an all-timer.
No.
So this is about him and defense and role players taking turns, stepping up. It's not supposed to happen like this. And I think they're going to win tonight.
I think they're going to win, and we'll get more into that as the show does run along, but I agree with you. And to do, here's what, when a good team is, that they're not relying on a star player, and Culver is a star on the college level. We'll see how good of a pro he turns out to be. The fact that they're leading Michigan State by two at the half on Saturday night, and he did nothing in half number one.
I mean, nothing until the end.
He did nothing until basically the 8 minute mark, or the 5 minute mark of the second half.
But to his credit, now Mooney made the run that gave them a cushion, but then Michigan State gets back in that game, then Culver makes the two biggest shots late.
Right,
that
the three.
Sick floater, and then that killer crossover for the three. So he makes three shots the entire game. So one for the first, 36-plus minutes, and then the two
big
combined daggers late to make sure they win that game.
Let's head out to Las Vegas. It's Jimbo. It's CBS Sports
it,
Radio. What's up, Jimbo?
Moose?
Good morning.
Moose.
Yes.
My nickname for 4 years I grew up on Long Island is Moose.
Oh,
just
there
so you know. So it's kind of funny.
Look at that.
I had to go to a birthday party, and so Amy Lawrence's show was over. Normally, I'd be Three Sheets to the Wind.
Okay.
But I love the energy that you and Taz have.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Unbelievable.
Thank you very much, buddy.
I guess my scenario is this. Let's just say the Yankees meet the Dodgers in the World Series. Game 7 in New York. 10th inning, 3-3. Aaron Judge is going against Jensen. There's one out, and it's 3-1. And the pitcher throws a ball. Umpire calls it. Game over. World Series. I mean, that's it. And it might be sort of, you know, anticlimactic. Or let's say Aaron Judge is leaning in the batter's box just a little, gets hit in the hand with his bat, which knocked him out last year. It has to be called.
Well, you're talking about something.
It's the rule.
I mean, you can't. You're talking about a hit batsman, right?
Well, you're
the judgment call about balls and strikes. If it's
sure.
How close is it? I mean, what
like
is the strike zone been?
Call a high and inside.
Well, let me ask you this:
the World Series end?
Hold on a second, Jimbo. What is the strike zone been all game long? I mean, there's different scenarios that could play out too. You want to tell me
sure.
it's right a borderline ball and strike, and the reliever's been all over the place? Yeah, I expect it's going to be called a ball.
What would you do if it? You know, I mean, you're thinking about the result, or are you thinking about your job?
Well, hold on a second. The scenarios, Jimbo, that and you're changing the course of the conversation here after I throw
sure.
something to you. So if you want to talk about the home plate umpire, he's thinking about doing his job, calling the game properly,
yes.
and calling the strike zone as he did inning one through inning nine. Now,
mm-hmm.
there does come – do we not see pitchers who are notorious strike throwers get the benefit of the doubt when the ball's on the black? Or if
sure.
it might be a little bit off? Did
mm-hmm.
did Greg Maddux and Eddie Perez used to set up and Tom Glavine – basically a ball and a half off the outside edge, a ball and a half off the inside edge every single time, and they basically play pitch and catch, and he'd hit the middle of the glove, and that would be called a strike?
Uh-huh.
You'd see that all the time, did you not? Now, was that technically a strike? It was not. But Maddux
right.
and Glavine got the benefit of the doubt. If you want to bring up the baseball example, and Jimbo, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you'd
sure.
show all the time. And strikes for Greg Maddux at that stage and Tom Glavine were not strikes for any other starter in Major League Baseball, but there were strikes for them.
Well, sure. I guess my example is that I realized in the largest format, in the biggest stage, where you know a title is on the line, and you're in a situation where in baseball, some of the simplest things can lose a game.
Yeah.
Where do you draw the line with an umpire, no matter who it is? You know, maybe you talk Glavine years ago, you know, let's just say today. You know, what do you do?
Well, let me ask you,
I would hate to have that job.
Well, it's a tough job. I mean, it is. It's a tough job. You probably have sleepless nights. If you're one that's
sure.
a strict grader of the job that you do, you probably beat yourself up. I mean, it's a very difficult job. Jill, let me ask you this question. You're out in Vegas,
yes,
right?
I,
Saturday night,
yes.
as that game goes final, did you feel good about how that game ended? If you did, that's fine. I'm just curious.
The people at Carrabba's were going yeah. bananas. It was
so
crazy.
There you go. Well, as long as the beers were flowing, and thank you, Jimbo, or should I call you Moose, out there in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada.
Did he say he was not Three Sheets to the Wind and thought I was Taz?
No, he said he listens to the show after Amy when he's not Three Sheets to the Wind.
Oh, I thought he was specifically only listening today. Okay, my fault.
I don't get that sense. He might be right.
He had a birthday party, so he was in Three Sheets of the Wind.
Oh.
And Amy's show was over by the time he got to the radio.
Well, you're Taz.
Fine by me.
Yeah, there you go. Abilene, Texas. It's Tracy. It's CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Tracy?
Hey, all right. So I have a counterfactual for you, okay?
Okay.
So let's say the kid went up, that the block was underneath him, and he comes down and he hurts his knee. Then I've heard you guys in the NBA and other college games talking about those calls and talking about how they have to be made. So the only difference between the call that shouldn't have been made and should have been made is if the kid was hurt.
I don't look at it that way, no.
Isn't that a little bit hypocritical?
What's that?
And isn't that a bit hypocritical?
If what? If he got hurt, I didn't even bring up hurt. You did. I mean, what do you mean?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying you said it shouldn't have been made.
I don't like the call being made. Whether or not he comes,
saying the opposite.
Hold on a second, Tracy. Whether or not he comes down hurt or not is irregardless of the topic. If he comes down and lands on the foot of Doughty or comes down and rolls his ankle, now also I'm going to call a foul. Not every guy that goes up and gets hurt gets a foul call.
Yeah, but you guys, every time that happens and someone gets hurt and it's a career-ending injury or potentially a career-ending injury, you're always talking about how the ref should have made that call.
What example is that?
Well, Zion Williams, for one thing. How many weeks did you guys go on about how he shouldn't have been in the NBA because he shouldn't have been in that situation?
How he should have been in the NBA?
Yeah.
The one-and-done rule. How does Zion Williamson, who got hurt on his own, there was no foul on that play. His sneaker broke.
Right, but you guys are always talking about how the students should be kept safe so that they're safe for the next career.
Well, yeah. And I think some of these fouls for jump shooters, some of these calls, like this one, letting a guy land, I think obviously have a safety element in them. You know, not supposed to be underneath the player while he's coming down from a jump shot.
What does Zion Williamson and one and dones have anything to do with it?
We'll work through this because he seems to be on my side here, Moose. So I want as much support against you as possible.
You
so we're going
to
work
aboard.
Through this one.
Logically, are we here, Tracy?
I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm a Red Raider.
Okay. Well,
and
congratulations.
Actually, Auburn would have been the better matchup for us because we do better against offensive teams.
I got you. Well, you've got an unbelievable coach. You got a great team. You have every opportunity to win the game tonight. First of 50 wins.
Exactly. But here's the thing that I'm saying is that if we're talking about we have to protect the players because they have money at stake in a future career, right?
Right.
Even if this happens at the end of the game, if it's a foul that could potentially in the career because they come down wrong.
Tracy,
protect that kid because you've got to protect his future earnings.
Yeah, you know what? But I'm not. I look at one and done. See, you're mixing arguments and debates here and conversations. I look at the one and done rule as being one that's protecting not Zion Williamson. It's protecting the guy that gets bad information. Right. That's where it's protecting those guys. Now, those guys may never have any intention of playing college basketball. They may look at a scenario and go play over in Europe. I'm trying to prevent the guys like Leon Smith. I'm trying to prevent guys that go to the NBA that shouldn't be going to the NBA right out of high school.
They go the next year with bad information.
Well, no. They go to college or they do something or they realize that their game is not working. No. Hold on a second. No, that doesn't necessarily mean the case. Guys can believe one thing coming out of high school and then go to college and get a kind of a dose of reality of where they actually stand and what they need to do, or they could go play over in Europe,
right? Or they're okay in college, but they're not yet story for the NBA, and now someone's still telling them you should go, and they go and they don't.
Guys now are smarter than that. I think guys have more of a propensity to stay than they would leave. But I think 10 years, 15 years ago, I think you're right. I think guys would probably leave. I think guys are probably a little bit smarter now than they were back then of believing everything that was being told to them. So I think it's protecting the guys that are getting terrible information that make a decision that go undrafted or drafted late in the second round and don't have a college scholarship to lean back on. That's where I think the NBA rule protects. Now, we talk about protecting players. You could go a lot of different ways with that. You can go with the NCAA argument in terms of not taking care of Division I athletes with the amount of money that they come in and they're making off the backs of these Division I athletes. We can go down that path. When I look at protecting NCAA players, if you're a Zion Williamson, we talked about at that stage whether or not he should come back and play for Duke because of him being potentially the number one overall draft choice. Kyle Guy is not going to be the number one overall draft choice by Virginia. All right? Now, he's former Mr. Basketball in Indiana. He's a hell of a shooter. He's got size. He's a willing defender. I think there's a role in the NBA for Kyle Guy, but I don't think he's not going to be the number one overall pick. There's a different levels of earnings. As the stories are being written about how much money Zion Williamson, Bogus, is going to make in a sneaker deal, whether it be Adidas, whether it be Nike, wherever he decides to go, when he ends up being the number one overall pick, hopefully by the New York Knicks. that's from my vantage point. God, they need the help.
Always comes back to Moose.
That's exactly I'm sorry if you're a Phoenix Sun fan, but hopefully it's the New York Knicks. You know what I mean?
I mean, you got Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. You're fine.
Oh, yeah. If you're the Suns, yes,
yeah,
no doubt.
You're good.
Yeah, right. I know.
Come on, you're almost there.
So, but we're talking about protecting that player. This is a little bit different. I'm not thinking of injury at that stage. I'm just not. Now, letter of the law. Listen, everyone that's calling up and defending it, you have every right to defend it. You have single right to defend it because of the very fact of that, according to the rule, it is a foul. But I don't think at that stage I'm making that call. We'll get the thoughts of Vin Parisi. He's going to join us next. Fox Sports 1, college hoops analyst, former assistant, Iona, Rutgers, does some work locally in New York on SNY as well. We'll get into the championship game tonight, Texas Tech, Virginia. If you're a Red Raider or you're a Cavalier, Wahoo Nation, well, we'll give you a feel in terms of how Vin thinks tonight's game will play out. Look back at Saturday night. Look at some of the coaching hires as well. It is Taz and the Moose. Bogish is in the house on a Monday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
Give Taz and the Moose a call. 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. And the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes. You can save 15% or more on car insurance. CBS Sports Network is at Augusta. At Augusta National for a tradition unlike any other, as they say. As we keep an eye on golf's biggest stars, fine-tuning their game before taking to the tee. It's the Masters on the Range today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. I'll be home. I'll flip that on later on this afternoon. Noon Eastern.
What a week for Nance, Pacific. Huh?
Yeah.
What a week.
National Championship right down to Augusta National. Where they have the Champions Dinner Tuesday night, right?
That sounds about right.
Par 3 contest Wednesday?
Yeah.
And then we get going on Thursday, which is fantastic.
Just got the email that our good friend Ann Liguori will be checking in live.
Yes.
All at the end of this week throughout our updates from Augusta.
The Masters.
Love
all
it.
Week long. No
it's
doubt.
Like a half day off for me.
It's great. I know.
From 10:39, I just go, I'm Andrew Bogish. Here's Ann. She talks for a minute, comes back to me. I'm Andrew. See you top of the hour.
Yeah,
and we're done.
Right. Take it away. all right. We're going to chat with Vin Parisi. Talk a little college basketball with Vin here momentarily. Andrew's going to update us with everything going on in the world of sports.
This one is sponsored by the NFL. The 2019 NFL Draft, from the war rooms to the green rooms, NFL Network covers it all, live from Nashville. The 2019 NFL Draft starts April 25th on NFL Network, ESPN, ABC, and the NFL app. Certain restrictions apply. We are roughly 14 hours from tip-off in Minneapolis. Virginia or Texas Tech will win its first title tonight. Red Raiders forward Tariq Owens spent yesterday with his right foot in a boot after getting hurt Saturday night. Owens didn't practice yesterday. The Baylor Lady Bears won their third national title last night in Tampa, 82-81 over Notre Dame. Baylor led by 14 late in the third quarter when star forward Lauren Cox went down screaming with a left knee injury. Her head coach, Kim Mulkey.
The worst part of the game was Lauren Cox. We controlled that game from the start till the time she went off the floor, and we had to regroup.
And they barely did. The 14-point lead completely disappeared, but Baylor got the tie-breaking hoop from Chloe Jackson with 3.9 seconds to go. Then Arike Ogunbowale was at the free throw line with 2 seconds. 2 seconds later, a chance to tie. She, who hit the game winners in last year's Final Four and national title game, missed the first free throw. Then she hit the second, trying to miss it. A foul and a tipped inbounds pass later, and Baylor had won. Coaching news now. Tennessee's Rick Barnes, reportedly a strong candidate now at UCLA, and Virginia Tech replacing Buzz Williams with Wofford's Mike Young. The first 5 seeds in the NBA's East are now set this morning, as well as the first 7 teams in the bracket. The Nets and Magic, the latest to clinch. Brooklyn winning in Indy yesterday, 108-96. Then Orlando won in Boston, 116-108. The Pistons are currently 8th with the Hornets and Heat a game behind them with 2 to go. The Warriors clinching number 1 in the West last night, winning their final regular season game at Oracle Arena, 131-104 over the Clippers. The Blazers down the Nuggets, 115-108, and the Rockets steamrolled the Suns, 149-113. Houston breaking its own single-game record with 27 threes. The Dodgers outscored the Rockies last night 12-6 for a three-game sweep in Denver, and U.S. Women's Soccer handled Belgium 6-0 in L.A. in a World Cup tune-up. Carly Lloyd scored two of those six American goals. Moose?
All right, Bogus. Let's hit the guest line right now, shall we? Let's welcome aboard Vin Parisi, college hoops analyst, Fox Sports, locally in New York on SNY. Just cleared his throat as well. Good morning, Vin. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Moose and Bogue.
How's everything, all right? You know, Vin, here, you know, Andrew and I spent the first, you know, hour of the show plus, end of the UVA-Auburn game, right? How does an official on the court, A, miss the double dribble on Jerome, right? Number one. Two, I know it's a foul. That scenario, if do you think that's the proper call and the foul on Kyle Guy down three, down two, sending him to the free throw line for three with Auburn leading that game with two, 62-60?
Well, first, let's get to the double dribble. Nobody caught it live.
True.
And in fact, neither did. And Bill Raftery's the best. And the crew didn't even catch it on the instant replay. Gene Steratore had to come by 10 minutes later and show everyone. You know, I think if he would have just lost the dribble in the backcourt, guys, and picked the ball back up with two hands and begin dribbling, it would have been an obvious double dribble. I think it was the behind the back off the foot while the defender was on him tight. I don't know if it simulated a deflection, but, you know, you very rarely – you know, see that situation. I just know for a fact that happens often and it's not called. So it was interesting just to see how it developed. I know people are saying, oh, you got to be able to review that. Well, now if we're going to go back and dissect and review every little bit, you know, what about the fact that they were grabbing and tugging them and trying to foul intentionally right before it too? So, I mean, we can't get into that. In terms of Kyle Guy, that was a foul. That was called a foul every night of the season this year. And it's not so much about the body contact hitting, guys, as it is you have to be able to take a three-point shot and come down without a guy submarining your legs, as delicate as it could have been.
You think, though, at that stage, though, Vin, you know, 1.5 seconds to go, inbounds play, you know, you want that call being made? If you're Bruce Pearl, I know he bit his tongue after the game, and was very politically correct. We saw him screaming and ranting like a madman after that call was made. You know, very similar. I had the issue with at the end of the Purdue Tennessee game. You know, at the end of this game, I get it's a foul. I understand it. I just look at the context of everything. I just don't love the call.
I hear you. I hear you from that standpoint. But you know, they pride themselves on what's called in the first 2 minutes of the game needs to be called in the last 2 minutes of the game. I think that if you got all these coaches at a dinner or a golf outing and you interviewed all of them, when you take the emotion out of the game, just for consistency reasons, they would want it like that.
Sure.
You know, I could almost flip it, you know, the other way, Moose, as if that's called every single day of the season and that's not called on Saturday night, how are you feeling if you're Tony Bennett when you know you had a chance? I mean, at the end of the day, Kyle Guy still has to go to the line and go 3-for-3 from the line, which, by the way, only happens 48.6% of the time, is the guy going 3-for-3 on a three-point foul.
And then last night, you had one of the best players in the women's game at the line hit two for Notre Dame to tie and extend that game, and she misses the first one. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly not an easy thing to get Kyle Guy to do that. Now, Vin, we go ahead to the game tonight, and me and Moose really both like Texas Tech, but then I keep remembering that Tariq Owens was in a walking boot yesterday, and obviously that's a huge, huge question mark for this one tonight. Can they win if he's not Tariq Owens?
Yeah, I'm nervous about that one too, because he's such a big part of what they do, and it's not even so much about the block shots with him as it is the altering of shots. And their ball pressure is so elite, Andrew, that they funnel guys to the paint sometimes for just low percentage looks. He's gotten a lot better offensively since he's left St. John's there as well. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that ankle comes out. Here's the thing about Texas Tech tonight. You know their defense is going to be good enough. You know this is going to be a rock fight, and their offense has been just good enough throughout. But I just know that Virginia is going to come at Culver the same way as Saturday. And, you know, if remember this, guys, if Matt Mooney doesn't go on that three straight three-point field goals in that three-minute stretch midway through the second half, Texas Tech might not pull this one out, because that's what led to that 13-point cushion
right
down the stretch. They held Culver to 10 points. I just think Virginia has a little bit more offense left in the tank. They've left a lot on the table offensively. And, you know, I think they're going to control tempo with the ball in Ty Jerome's hands the majority of the night.
You know, were you surprised at how, I mean, I guess you can't be surprised about anybody struggling offensively against Texas Tech. What surprised you most about Michigan State's performance Saturday night against the Red Raiders?
You know, they out Michigan State. Michigan State. And coming into this one, guys, the big thing that everyone was keeping their eye on from our standpoint was, you know, ball movement and how guys could play off of Cassius Winston. And, you know, I think just, you know, the personnel and some of the Colts shooting spells and everything that Izzo eluded the last three or four weeks but was able to get bailed out by Cassius Winston wound up catching up to them. And now you've got a Michigan State team who, you know, they were averaging 19, 20 assists per game. Now all of a sudden you go against a Texas Tech team that only gives up 9 assists per game. And what does that mean? That means that they get teams to go one-on-one, isolation, late in the shot clock and have to make an NBA-type play. That is not Michigan State. And I thought eventually they could get by more on the backboards. I knew that Texas Tech's defense was great, but, you know, I mean, when you look at Mooney and veteran grad transfers, I mean, eventually you got to make big shots. You could be the best defensive team in the world. You need some big shot making, and the Spartans didn't have enough in the tank.
Vin, I said this last hour. You've coached this game your whole life. You played it. I think getting teenagers and, you know, 20-somethings to play defense for full 40 minutes might be the hardest thing a coach can do in basketball, maybe across all sports. So does that begin in recruiting? Is it going out there and finding kids that want to play defense? How does this all begin for Coach Baird to get them to where they are now, leading the way with defense?
Yeah, that's a great point. And this is what makes Texas Tech's program so unique, because when you think of this on paper, this shouldn't be happening. The guy loses 4 starters from an Elite Eight team. And then has a chance to win it all.
Yeah.
This is what it is. Is usually you're trying to talk elite offensive players into playing defense. That's why we always give Calipari credit later in the year. But for all the talk about recruiting, whether it's Duke, North Carolina, you know, one and done, it's always about the offensive player, which ranks a player. Chris Beard and his staff at Texas Tech actually go about it the other way. They recruit for defense. And I think, Andrew, the biggest misnomer that fans have is that they think that defense and rebounding is all just about heart and hustle. Well, no, it's not. You also need foot speed. You also need strength. You also need agility. They recruit for that in a strategic way, like an NFL team. And they went after Tariq Owens for a reason. And then what they do is that they develop guys offensively. I mean, if you remember Zaire Smith, who went number 16 in the NBA draft last year, he wasn't a top 100 kid when he got to Texas Tech. And now they've made Culver into a lottery pick. No one had this kid as a lottery pick. So they develop guys offensively, but they base their recruiting over the defensive end. And, you know, that's a new conventional way, you know, almost the way coaching staffs try to mimic the Patriots now in the NFL.
Right.
I'm interested to see if college basketball coaches try to start mimicking this Texas Tech philosophy.
We're talking to Vin Parisi, Fox Sports, SNY, locally in New York, college hoops analyst, former assistant. Vin, tonight, I mean, you're leaning Virginia. Let's get a couple keys. You're a Texas Tech fan driving around right now listening to the program. Give me a couple keys for the Red Raiders for them to cut down the nets. What do you need to see from Beard's team tonight for them to beat Virginia?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, DeAndre Hunter hasn't, you know, like Culver, you know, hasn't had, you know, the offensive explosions recently that they had during the regular season. The key is that they're going to have to put, you know, these are two elite defenses, but it's in different ways. Virginia has the pack line defense. They like to contain. They like to contest. They like to guard you as a group. and they like to make you take tough twos. Texas Tech is about denying pressure, not allowing you to reverse the basketball, making post passes difficult. So if you're Texas Tech tonight, you know, you could contain these guys. You could pressure these guys. The issue is going to be, do you take advantage of your possessions? Because you're not going to get a lot of possessions. They're going to walk the ball up, and Ty Jerome's going to use 20 to 25 seconds of the shot clock tonight. And say what you want about DeAndre Hunter and Kyle Guy and everything. This team is playing for a national championship Monday night because Ty Jerome has been fantastic from the Purdue game on and in. And if you look, that fourth silly foul that he got against Auburn, that's when Auburn went on the 9-0 run in that 3 minutes that he had to go to the bench. I think that he's going to control the game. And, you know, I think that eventually Virginia just makes them play at their speed offensively.
All right, but, I mean, you know, for Texas Tech, do you need Mooney to give you a 20-plus? Do you need Culver? I mean, Culver only gave you a 10. You know, what do you need to see from Culver tonight offensively? Minimizing possessions here, I agree with that. Defensively, you know, you look at Virginia, the options they have offensively, Vin. But individually, yeah. When you look at Texas Tech, Culver's obviously, if they're winning a game tonight, I know they survived the national semifinal. They can't beat Virginia with Culver's giving you 10.
Yeah, and I think that's where I'm going, Moose. We're talking about the same thing. Is I don't know if they could check enough boxes offensively to get by Virginia
gotcha.
With this one, because I don't know if Mooney could replicate that. Once again, if Mooney doesn't go on that scoring spurt, you know, they may not even be here that Monday night. And listen, Virginia's going to have their game plan built around Culver. Culver's going to be a lottery pick, and Culver's an unbelievable talent. But in college basketball games like this, where the offense is going to control tempo with a point guard that's going to walk it up, he's not going to get enough reps. It's going to take him out of his rhythm. And I think Culver and Mooney, there's going to be way more pressure on them now to hit deep contested threes. I don't think he's going to be able to get into the lane and create the way he normally does. Tariq Owen gives them a pop offensively when he's not shot blocking inside, but he's got that ankle situation that we have to look at. It's very interesting here. You know, as much as you want to rely on the defensive end, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they bring on the other end of the floor.
Vin, every once in a while, games like this don't go in the direction that we think they're going to go. Is there any chance in your mind this game is more about offense than defense when we're talking about it tomorrow morning?
I don't know. I could see this game being in the 20s at halftime. I just think it's going to be a pure rock fight. You know, neither team is style is going to be conducive to getting up and down, putting points on the board, getting out. Now, Texas Tech can score off their defense in transition. I'm not saying they can't get an easy run out, but Virginia is really going to limit possessions. And, you know, late in the shot clock, Tony Bennett has more perimeter options, I think, to bail themselves out.
We're chatting with Vin Parisi. You like Virginia tonight in the national championship game, correct?
Yeah. I took them when I was with you, Moose, on Selection Sunday. I know some of these predictions have went off-road. But you know, I'm gonna stick with the Cavs here from Monday night.
All right, a couple of the other things in college basketball, Vin, want to get your thoughts. This UCLA job, you know, reports are Barnes from Tennessee would be interested in the job if offered. They kicked the tires on Calipari from Kentucky. He decided he got a lifetime deal with UK. You know, how attractive of a job is this UCLA job? A, B, do you think Rick Barnes would be a good hire by the Bruins?
Yeah, I think Rick Barnes is great, and he has a great staff. He's had a great staff. You know, now Rob Lanier to, you know, Georgia State is interesting, but I still think that UCLA is a top 20 job. To me, this still seems like Rick Barnes is going to flirt. Maybe, you know, it helps with his current situation and he winds up staying. I don't see him pulling the trigger on this. I could be wrong. I still think UCLA is a top 20 job. Where I'm puzzled is what have they been doing the last two or three months? I mean, for this high profile of a job to be open, for them to know that they're going to make a move, you know, almost similar to when Kentucky knew that they were going to make the move from Gillespie and go all in on Cal. I just don't know where their game plan has been. I mean, you Good can't point. Tell me that for 3 months. You can't tell me that for 3 months their game plan was to huddle in a room and throw less money at John Calipari than he's making at Kentucky. I mean, it's really unbelievable. It makes no sense. And now you're not making it lucrative, or you're not, you know, selling it enough to where the Mick Cronins and other guys like that of the world have come. I also think there's a little bit of that New York Yankees pressure in the back of coaches' heads when they look at the fact that, you know, Ben Hallen had that type of success, you know, going to that many Final Fours and got ran out of town. I think it's beyond what happened to Steve Alford. You got to make sure that you got the right guy, but you got to get the right guy that's going to embrace that entire situation, because UCLA is a whole other animal.
And Vin, I'd be thinking they were waiting on Tony Bennett if they weren't out there making offers for other legitimate head coaches. I mean, they clearly don't have any. You know, it's not like they know Bennett's coming to them. They're just biding their time until he's done playing. I'm with you. They think this is UCLA, and they've known for a long time. We should know by now who their next head coach is.
But I could also see. I could also see the fact that they're just waiting to talk to Bennett, and they don't even know or have any ducks in a row yet. I mean, just knowing Tony Bennett and his wife and how involved they are in that Virginia community and their church and their faith, and look at what he's been through between last season's adversity and now if this goes down with a national championship this year, I just don't see him as a Los Angeles, UCLA type of guy. You know who I think actually would have been good out there? I always thought Musselman could have gotten it done out there, because I think that UCLA is at the point now to where, you know, they could go a little bit outside the box. He's dealt with that high-profile pro pressure from his NBA.
He's kind of cool. He's young.
He's kind of a beat guy that would embrace the fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. You know, Beard is not going to be long. I mean, he's not going right now, but he's not going to be long for Texas Tech. If I'm Chris Beard, I mean, some massive program is going to throw you a lot of money and a big-time program here in the not-so-distant future.
No doubt. I mean, look, guys, think of this. This team was preseason picked to come in seventh in the Big 12. Seventh. Yeah. And this guy's playing for a national championship game.
I was rooting for Michigan State. You know that on Saturday night, Vin.
I know that movie.
You let me down, Vin.
Party green sweater on. I apologize. That was I.
Hey, Vin, appreciate the time this morning. Enjoy the championship game tonight. We'll chat again soon, all right?
Thank you, boys. You as well.
Thanks, Vin.
Parisi, Fox Sports, college hoops analyst, SNY locally in New York as well. I thought when they got it down to one, Bogish, before that floater by Culver to make it a three-point game, I thought Michigan State had them exactly where they wanted them, that they were going to pick. There were a couple Spartan possessions late. Down 52-47, Winston comes up, shoots a three.
A quick three, right?
Quick three.
Yeah.
And bricks it. I didn't love that offensive possession, number one. And then when it was 52-51, after the lefty makes the layup, right, a great drive, I thought that at that stage Michigan State was going to win. And then Culver comes down, hits the bunny, makes it a three-point game, then the big three, and all of a sudden six, and then I thought the game was over.
Yeah, I was with you. I was waiting the entire time for the full Sparty comeback, and we basically got it, and then it was done with. And Texas Tech continues to play like a team that's been there before, and they haven't.
No, they have not. And maybe tonight it will be Virginia cutting down the nets. Two programs. I mean, Virginia, I mean, two unbelievable coaching jobs. We know that Virginia, the expectations were to be here tonight in Minneapolis and play in the national championship game. Those were not the expectations for Texas Tech, but here they are nonetheless. And the Red Raiders, with the way that they've dispatched of some of these upper echelon teams, has been very, very impressive. We'll get into the Paul Pierce, D-Wade debate. We'll do that. Taz of the Moose, Mood Taz is off. Mark Malusis, Andrew Bogish with you on this Monday morning right here, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, two more brought to you by the Home Depot. Next generation of home improvement with everything you do. You need to do projects smarter. Home Depot, more saving, more doing. Let's take a look at a player who's doing more for his team. How about Russell Westbrook posted his 32nd triple-double of the season to carry the Thunder past the T-Wolves 132-126 in Minneapolis. Westbrook finished with 27 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds for OKC, which won its third in a row. Bogus, you want to talk about nonsense? I'll tell you about nonsense. And that is this dopey D-Wade, Paul Pierce debate where Pierce is saying he's had a better career. Wade is saying he's had a better career. I mean, is this really what it comes down to when, you know, you're working studio, if you're Pierce, Wade at the end of the career, now everyone's celebrating, waxing poetic as he's doing his Derek Jeter-like tour or has done his Derek Jeter-like tour around the NBA? I mean, it gets to a point. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Both of them. I mean, these are nonsense.
These are things that make me mad that Taz is off today because I didn't want to know about this. I saw the headlines. I didn't want to process Paul Pierce's weird argument, but I had to because I'm sitting here today because Taz was sitting here overnight talking about WrestleMania.
Yes.
And I knew it was going to come up. It's, I mean, come on, Paul Pierce. You're a really, really, really good player. But you're not Dwayne Wade. I mean, stop it.
Well, I mean, but who? I mean, who? I mean, so now if I'm Dwayne Wade on supporters, what? He's the third greatest shooting guard of all time. I mean, when it comes down to of levels, and you could characterize individually big game. I mean, Paul Pierce was an unbelievable big game player. So, and he just was a remarkably clutch player. Had a lot of big. So, if you're going to talk about clutch factor, how are you going to grade out players? I mean, Wade, 13-time All-Star, 8-time All-NBA, 3-time All-Defense, 3 rings. Pierce, 10-time All-Star, 4-time All-NBA, 0 All-Defense, 1 ring. So, you're going to look at, yeah, Wade's been a better player over the course of his career. That's fine. Paul Pierce makes him better. But this is what it comes down to? I mean, this is how we're grading players? Now, if you're asking me, big game moment, last second shot, who do I want taking the shot, Pierce or Wade? Every day of the week and 8 times on Sunday, I want Paul Pierce taking that shot. Now, you're going to tell me who's had a better career? I tell you, Dwayne Wade's had a better career because he has. But, I mean, those are – I mean, but we're in a debate now where you have two guys.
Well, also, Paul Pierce can't create this debate either, which is a whole other thing. This wasn't like somebody else on that panel saying it and led to an actual valid
That's
conversation.
Fair.
Paul Pierce can't be whining about – stop loving Dwayne Wade. I was better than him. It can't start that way either.
I mean, the victory tour is nauseating.
It is
a little nauseating.
It is.
Where you get, I mean, Dwayne Wade has hung on here for literally 2 years.
He actually hasn't been, and Mike can confirm or deny this, he hasn't been that bad this year.
Well, I mean,
they wouldn't be.
I understand he's not been that bad down in Miami. He was brutal a year ago. He was not great. He's nowhere near the player he once was. He's hanging out. If you want to talk about Dwayne Wade, if you're showing up to watch D Wade and playing now and at this ripe old age as compared to when he was in his prime, not the same player. That's fine. You want to get paid? Miami wants to pay you. Remember, he got the offer from the Chinese Basketball League during the course of the offseason. They were going to give him, what, $22, $24 million to go play over in China in 1 year? God bless. I don't hold any ill will against him. That's fine. Make all the money you could possibly make. That's all well and good. The victory tour, though, where you announce it, and it got to be much with Mo, with the Yankees, with Jeter, with the Yankees. It's a little much here with Wade.
The kind of self-serving.
I mean, it's a little much. I mean, how many times can you have your rear end kissed over the span of 6 months? I mean, honestly. And then I'm good. So Paul Pierce, I agree with you, throws out there he's a better player than Dwayne Wade, and everyone's all up in arms like he just robbed a bank. I mean, who the hell cares? It's all open to interpret. I mean, who cares? At the end of it, who cares? I mean, Wade is won 3 titles. Let's be realistic here. In that first championship, you want to talk about officiating with Shaq? I mean, how many times that Dallas team, that was a great team. They were sending Wade down to the free throw line any possible chance they could in that series. You know that, Bogus. You want to talk about bad officiating.
See?
That series, they sent him to the free throw line all the time.
See how worked up you are? This is why I didn't want to know about these things. This is why it's all Taz's fault.
Right. And the other two.
Paul Pierce.
Right. Ray Allen, number one. And thank LeBron. Anyway, there we go. We got the 3 coming your way next. It's Taz. It's Moose. Focus is him out. CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.